All right. Recorder has started. Thank you so much for your time, Ambassador Dowd, and taking to visit with us. Last week, you addressed farmers in our region at the Prairie Grains Conference and covered lots on the trade relationship between the U.S. and China. I'd actually like to dive a little deeper into that. How is the implementation of the U.S. and China Phase 1 trade deal coming along?
Here a couple of weeks ago, we saw the October trade data, which is our latest trade data that we have, and it indicated that October was actually the biggest and best month in U.S. history for U.S. ag exports to China. So we had also, the month of October was our best month in U.S. history in dollars of U.S. soybean exports. In fact, it was our third best month in history overall for U.S. ag exports in general. So, you know, soybeans is a big chunk of that, but if you look at things overall, so far in calendar year 2020 through October, U.S. ag exports to China are up an incredible 69% from last year. And that's really remarkable given COVID and everything going on. You know, we're down 8% in Mexico, and that's because of COVID and a really bad economy down there in Mexico. And so when you net it all out, our total ag exports are up just 2% from a year ago, but we're up 69% into China.
What's the magic number that you're using as the metric for success this first year of the Phase 1 trade deal? What is that 2017 number?
Yeah, so all you really need to keep in mind in terms of the numbers is China made a commitment to import from the United States $80 billion in ag products over a two-year period. And so, you know, are there specific numbers for specific commodities in that agreement that are not going to be made public? Yeah. But for U.S. agriculture, all you really need to know is the $80 billion over two-year number. And don't get caught up on the day-to-day what's going on here. The other thing you need to keep in mind is that the agreement was signed January 15th of this year. It entered into force February 14th. The exclusions process that China exempted the retaliatory tariffs, that process began on March the 2nd. So really, we didn't really get this thing going until March or April. And if you look at the trade data, that's what you see is that January and February were really, really slow from any measure. So the fact that we're doing as well as we are now, considering how slow of a start we got, speaks to the fact that, you know, we've made a lot of changes here. In fact, if you look at the Phase 1 agreement, there are some 57 structural changes that China agreed to. We've made at least 50 of those at this point. I don't know exactly what the number is now, but we're down to just a couple of things that we, you know, like biotech, that we're going to continue to work on, I think, with them for years to come. But it's really manifested itself into enormous changes in our trading relationship. For example, our dairy exports to China are up 46% versus a year ago. And if you look back at the document, there's a lot of stuff in there that we fixed on dairy that we've been wanting to fix for years. So the answer is I understand everybody, well, what happens if it doesn't happen? Well, let's focus on the notion of where the trajectory is headed in the right direction. In October, we sold them the best month ever in beef of $48 million, and the direction of that is going. I think we're going to, you know, keep increasing on that month to month. I think November is going to be better than October. And so that's the thing to focus on at this point. And then at some point down the road here, after we go a little bit further, we can look back and see what we need to do and you know, more importantly, the things that we need to fix. But the answer is most of those things have been fixed, and we're doing very, very well.
Aside from biotech, what hasn't been fixed?
Well, one of the other issues that we really focused on with them is the feed additive ractopamine that we use in livestock. And their challenge with that is a language issue and the fact that they don't have an ability to really regulate things like that in China. And so there's some bad compounds that they call the same thing in the Chinese language. We spent hours and hours and hours talking about all this stuff, and I think, you know, ultimately China will get to a point where they will, you know, use this technology that we, you know, this ractopamine has been around in the United States since the 1950s. You know, it's a ketone derived from raspberries. It's pretty basic chemistry, but the problem is in China, there's bad compounds like clenbuterol and other things that they, you know, call the same thing, and I get that. Nobody wants anybody to use that stuff, and so it's an ability to regulate this that we have to work through with them, and I think at some point it'll all get sorted out, but it's not something that we were able to get done in this agreement.
In terms of enforcement of this, I know you said focus on the bigger picture here, the $80 billion in a two-year time frame, but I also know in the past, so in the last few months, we've been talking about how China does in their first year. And to clarify, I wondered what that deadline looked like. Were you measuring that based off of the calendar year as it ends 12/31/2020, you know, how China does?
Those are details that I'm not going to divulge at this point in the process. But what I would say this, let's say that China didn't make these changes and they fell short of what they had committed to do. What the agreement says is that the United States has an ability to put tariffs back on proportionate to their failure to meet their commitment. And China doesn't want that to happen. We don't want that to happen. And so, you know, there is that aspect that is enforceable in this agreement that is the reason that China, when you look at what China says, they said, no, we fully intend on making that commitment and meeting that requirement. And so we're going to, you know, we're not there yet. Let's continue to wait and see how this thing evolves as we're just getting started. But the key thing is we have China headed in the right direction here. And I think it's been a historic and monumental effort to get them to this point. And I think we're going to benefit for years to come as a result of what we were able to work with them on these structural changes to increase market access. So to give you one more metric here to help you understand what I mean when I talk about an increase in market access. Before we started these negotiations with China and agriculture, there were about 1,500 facilities eligible to export their products to China. And I'm talking about beef processing facilities, pet food processing facilities, infant formula facilities, alfalfa hay facilities. Across the board in agriculture, there were 1,500 of those before we started. Today, we have well over 4,000 facilities of U.S. agricultural products eligible to export their products to China. That is an enormous increase, historic by any measure. Other countries in the world are really jealous of what we were able to get done there because they've had that frustration with China for years. So the point, this alone gets us to a point where we're really going to be able to enhance our ability to export products to China. Typically speaking, tariffs are not the problem in terms of dealing with China. It's all of these non-tariff trade barriers. It's all these other restrictions that we worked hundreds and hundreds of hours last year working with China to get these things resolved.
After 2021, that Phase 1 agreement says China will work toward maintaining increased levels. What does that mean?
Well, I think that what that means to me is that China recognizes that it needs to import food. And it also is China's recognition that the U.S. food supply is the safest in the world. And I will tell you, through the course of our hundreds of hours of conversations, 33 negotiating sessions, they made it clear that they understand that we have a tremendous regulatory system in the United States for food safety, and whether that's on the meat side, fruit and vegetable side, et cetera, China gets that. And so much of our conversation was about them asking questions and understanding how we regulate, why we regulate, the reasons why we do what we do. And I think it went a long way with them to understand they want our food. They want to do business with us. They get that we have a great system for food safety. And this is what you see in that language is them recognizing that fact.
Thank you. Anything else on this Phase 1 deal before we transition?
I think that covers it, probably.
Well, I'll also say we're at the 10-minute mark. Do you have 5 more minutes to chat, or should I be
wrapping
this up?
Sure.
Wonderful.
No, go right ahead.
Thank you. All right. So in your comments at Prairie Grains, you really reflected on so much. There were a lot of trade deals done this year. What would you say maybe the biggest win was for trade deals this year?
Well, I will tell you, for me personally, one of the great unsung trade deals of all time in agriculture is the deal that we were able to do with Japan. And the U.S.-Japan trade agreement, other people refer to it as Phase One with Japan, for us in agriculture was absolutely tremendous in the fact that we were able to get even with all of our other competitors into the Japanese market on January 1 of this year. So we've enjoyed that now for nearly a whole year. And that was critically important for us, in particular for wheat and for beef and pork. On the meat side of the equation, on the wheat side of the equation, if we did not, were not able to negotiate that agreement with Japan, we would have really, really been struggling here in 2020 with them. And the credit for that goes to Ambassador Lighthizer for figuring out how to do that deal with Japan and not involving Congress. And that to me, is one of the great stories for us in agriculture. You know, the other thing I would say quickly is that the vote on USMCA, after a tremendous amount of effort by Ambassador Lighthizer, Ambassador Deputy C.J. Mahoney, working with Congress all these months, we secured, you know, the largest bipartisan vote in history for any trade agreement. And I think that's critical for agriculture and for our country going forward to say, look, this is the template for a trade agreement going forward. If you want to deviate from that, fine, but you're not going to get it through Congress if you do that. So this gives our trade negotiators now and in the future great leverage going forward with our trading partners.
You talked about the EU-US trade deal being something that you wish you really could be a part of. So can you speak to where we're at there and where you hope it lands in this next few years of negotiations or next few months?
Well, I think all of us in agriculture, I speak for all of us in agriculture and our frustration with the European Union when it comes to agriculture. I would point everybody to some comments recently made this week by our ambassador to the Food and Ag Organization in Rome, Ambassador Kip Thom, who talks about Europe's farm-to-fork strategy. I refer to that as a farm-to-empty-fork strategy in Europe, because if they actually implement their version of the Green New Deal in agriculture, people are going to go hungry in the world. There's going to be less food in the world. Food's going to be higher priced for everybody. That's a total disaster. And the fact that the Europeans continue to head down that road and try to peddle that nonsense in other countries and around the world is just, to me, completely outrageous. And it needs to stop. And hopefully we can continue, all of us in agriculture, continue to help folks understand that the use of technology in agriculture for all of us is absolutely critical. We're going to continue to use all the technology that we can in U.S. agriculture, and we are not going to apologize for it, ever.
Catherine Tai was named the nominee. Have you met with her? Do you know her real well?
I don't know her, but I know Ambassador Lighthizer and Ambassador Mahoney worked with her a great deal and have great respect for her.
What should we be expecting as this transition is made and maybe based off what you know, where things are headed?
I think that's the question for the folks coming in behind us here. I'm not gonna address that here today.
What's next for you?
Yeah, it's a great question, and probably not something that I'm gonna discuss at this point. I'm working on that as we speak.
What has been maybe the best part about doing this job in the last few years? You've done a lot of different things. Been a part of so many conversations.
Well, to me, it's been remarkable that in 3 years here, we've renegotiated deals with Canada and Mexico, Japan and China. That's 47% of U.S. ag exports. That's 47% of $141 billion in ag trade. That's a pretty amazing thing that we've gotten done. I think we've done all kinds of deals, single deals around the world. The deal with wheat in Brazil. We just continue to work on a little thing here with Indonesia and fruits and vegetables. We call those here in the building singles and doubles. We've got a several page list of those that we've worked on here in the last 3 years. So I think we've made a lot of progress. There's still obviously work to do. The challenge that I always talk to my boss about is, you know, the things that remain to get tackled, and for all of us in trade between the U.S. and other countries, or for us in U.S. agriculture, is they get a lot harder. Nothing gets easier as you scratch things off the list. The things that remain on the list are just really, really difficult to do going forward.
Did we miss anything, Ambassador? Anything else you want to tell farmers and ranchers out there? Anything else you want to say about your time at USTR?
Well, the last thing I would say is you're in really good hands. The career folks here, there are 16 folks here at USTR Ag Affairs. I refer to them as SEAL Team 6. They're the best of the best. And then you've got the Undersecretary for Trade position at USDA, and I call those folks over there, USDA is the full weight of the U.S. Army behind us and what we do. And these folks that work here at USTR are absolutely the best of the best. They are tremendous, and you're in very good hands going forward. It's been an honor to work with them.
When's your last day as chief ag negotiator?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Okay.
Here, probably within the next month or so. Yeah, be about a month or so. Yeah.